Well, our reading this morning comes from the book of Hebrews, chapter 12, verses 1 to 12. And therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood, and you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as a discipline. God is treating you as sons, for what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while, as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Therefore, strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees.
It's Motto Sunday. It's the first Sunday in January 2014, and we're thinking about who we've been singing about and praying to and worshipping. We're thinking about the Lord Jesus. Fix your eyes on Jesus. That's our motto text for this year, and I don't think we can better it, really. I read in the paper this week that many leisure sports centres order an increased number of exercise equipment for the beginning of the year. However, the article went on to say that most of them don't buy the equipment, they hire it in, because they know that literally in a month's time or less, by the end of January, there'll be no need for that extra equipment. Why? Well, you've guessed it. People sign up, of course, at the beginning of the year with good intentions, trying to get fitter, they want to get healthier, but they're just unable to stay the course. And literally in a matter of weeks, sometimes even days, they've given up. They lacked the necessary motivation. And so the excess equipment is returned to the suppliers, presumably for another year, until January 2015. Now, the writer to the Hebrews reminds us in our passage this morning that the Christian life is like a race. We're involved in physical activity, but it's not a 100-meter dash. It's more like a marathon. And as anyone who has ever run a long-distance race will know, and I don't know. Better be careful what I say about long-distance running, but I could never see the point of it, really, in school. Unless there was a ball involved, I wasn't particularly interested. But if you've ever done it, and I admire those who have, and there's people who are here I know who have done it, you'll know that you need the necessary motivation to keep going to the end, especially if it's a 10K or, a marathon, full marathon. Well, here the writer is concerned to motivate these Hebrew Christians who are in danger of falling out of the race, quitting before the finishing line is even reached. And so as we begin a new year together as a church, and as you begin a new year as an individual Christian seeking to follow Jesus, what is the motivation that the writer wants to give us this morning to run with perseverance the race marked out for us, whether that's individually or corporately? Well, I think in a word, he's concerned with our vision. With vision. You see, vision is absolutely essential for life. Without vision, the people perish, the Bible tells us. Without vision, there is no hope. And in biblical terms, vision is a picture of the future that is so much better than the present. Because God has a vision for the world to which he is working for its fulfillment. So we can have confidence in a vision for the future. And we need to have a clear vision for our lives, both personally and as a congregation, if we're to move into 2014 with any sense of hope and expectation, excitement, anticipation. We need to have that vision. And I think here in these opening verses of chapter 12, which Sarah read to us, the writer directs our vision in three ways. Let's just think about them for a few minutes this morning. First of all, he tells us to look around us and be encouraged. Look around and be encouraged. Notice how the chapter begins. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us run the race. Here's the first motivation to run. Of course, the picture is of the packed stadium with all the saints of God who've gone before us. Now they're in the stands and they're encouraging us on with their shouts and their applause. Now, of course, in the context of this letter to the Hebrews, these are the people that have just been described in the preceding chapter, in chapter 11. These are the heroes of the faith, as we sometimes call them. They're the great cloud of witnesses. But they are witnesses not so much in the sense that they are witnessing now our present race, but they are witnesses to us as we look up into the stands and see them there having completed their race. And they are shouting encouragements to us. It's as if they're saying, look, they're saying, we ran the race and we finished the course. And if we can do it, so can you. They are witnesses to how the race can be run and how it can be won. Because they are witnesses to God's promises, to God's power, to God's plan for our lives, to God's unfailing purposes, which will be accomplished by his grace. That's why they are encouraging witnesses to us. We were thinking yesterday morning in our half day of prayer, and Justine quoted it in her prayer this morning, about that wonderful promise from the end of Psalm 138, that last verse, the Lord will fulfill his purposes for me. Your love, O Lord, endures forever. Do not abandon the works of your hands. And all these people in the stands are witnesses to the fact that God did not abandon them, but fulfilled his purposes in and through them and for them. They are powerful witnesses to the fact that the Lord's love endures forever, to the end of the race and beyond. They are witnesses to God the Father's loving plan. They are witnesses to God the Son's saving power. They are witnesses to God the Spirit's comforting presence day by day. And all of these combine to see them through to the end of their race. And they're there for us. And they're witnesses to encourage us. Now, were all these people in the stands spiritual giants? You know, spiritual athletes in a different class of their own, way beyond our achievement? No, not at all. Think of some of the names. There was Jacob the deceiver, and yet he finished the race. There's Moses the murderer, and yet he finished. There's David the adulterer, and yet he finished the race. There's Rahab the prostitute, and yet there she is in the stands. She's finished the race. She's shouting to us. There's Gideon the doubter, and yet he finished. There's even Samson the waster, and yet by God's grace he finished, and he's in the stands. He's shouting us on. So be encouraged by God's grace. Look around you, says the writer, at the cloud of witnesses, and you be encouraged as you run your race. Why? Well, keep the vision of the victory of God's strength in their weakness clear in your eyes. That's the encouragement. The vision of the victory of God's strength in their weakness, despite who they were, clear in your eyes. If they've done it, so can we. Be encouraged. And of course, we can add to their numbers, can't we, down through church history. I often think of William Carey, the cobbler from Northampton, who took the gospel to India, who said of himself, I can only plod. That's what Carey said. I'm a plodder. But he finished. And then there's people known to us personally, I'm sure. Grandparents, fathers and mothers, uncles and aunts, who showed us Jesus and the power of the gospel in their lives. And now they've finished the race. Some have just finished very recently. They are all powerful witnesses to persevering faith, to the victory of God in their weaknesses. So look around. Be encouraged. That's the first motivation the writer gives us here for running the race. But secondly, he says, look within you and accept the challenge. Let's think about that for a moment. Look within and be challenged. You see, we do have a race to run. That's the reality of the Christian life. And it's a race that no one else can run for you. It's your race and you must run it. It's the race marked out for you, says the writer. And so you and I have to accept that challenge as we enter a new year. There's preparation we must do to run it. There's discipline that we have to embrace to run it. And these verses tell us very clearly what that is. First of all, he says, let us throw off everything that hinders us. Let us throw off everything that hinders us. You see, no one can run a marathon just on a whim, can they? You can't get up one morning and decide to run a marathon that day. It's not possible. At least I don't think so. There's got to be planning. There's got to be preparation. There's got to be practice. There's got to be perseverance. Not like the folk that we mentioned who just sign up in the new year for the gym but then give up before the end of January. And so in the race of the Christian life, we have to accept the challenge of discipline, as this chapter tells us. And part of that discipline is to throw off everything that hinders us in the race. The writer, of course, has the picture of first century Greek athletes competing in the games. He's got that in his mind. The athlete is stripped down to the absolute bare minimum so that nothing that he wears can hold him back or encumber him. I mean, we wouldn't dream, would we, of running a race in an overcoat and Wellington boots and dragging a suitcase. Of course we wouldn't. It's ridiculous. Not that there's anything wrong, of course, in themselves, in any of those things. It's just that they're not going to help us run the race. And the principle is exactly the same in the race of faith. There are things in our lives which in and of themselves are not wrong. They're not condemned in the Bible. They are innocent things. They are neutral things. But maybe for you or for me, this thing or that thing, there are weights that are holding us back in the race of holiness or the race of freedom or the race to serve the Lord wholeheartedly. Maybe there's a relationship. Maybe it's DVDs or maybe it's computer games or magazines. Maybe it's just food and drink. Lifestyle issues that are not wrong in themselves, but you know that they are not helping you run the race for Jesus. Well, throw off everything that hinders, says the writer. The race of the Christian life is not run well by asking, well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with this? It's run well by asking, is this helpful? Will it promote greater faith? Will it promote greater purity? Will it promote greater humility, greater self-control? Not, is it a sin? No, but does this help me run? Is it in the way? Is it a hindrance? Then if it is, throw it off. Accept the challenge. That's the first thing. And the secondly thing, he says, is to deal with the sin that so easily entangles us. And now we really are talking about those things that we know quite honestly are wrong. In our heart of hearts before God, they are wrong. And yet we tolerate them. Or worse still, we just will not give them up. So what are you looking at? What are you living for? Maybe it's the need to prove yourself all the time, to be well thought of by others. Well, that's pride. Maybe it's the need to have something, or to have many things, stuff, in order to make you happy. Well, that's covetousness, that's avarice. Perhaps it's just food and drink. That's gluttony. Perhaps it's the desire for sensuality and inordinate pleasure. Well, that's lust. I don't know what it is for you, but you know the things that you struggle with. You know what area of your life you are finding difficult to surrender in obedience to God. But we must do it if we're going to run the race. Accept the challenge. You know, sometimes I think it's helpful to make a list of these things and pray them through with God at the beginning of the year. Maybe it's appropriate to share them with a trusted Christian friend who can pray with you and for you and help you to be accountable, perhaps, through the year. Just as in a race, so now you need to plan, perhaps, a new training regime and commit to it. And don't listen to the lie of Satan, who will tell you, oh, you cannot change. You're just your personality. That things can never be any better for you. You're trapped. You can never have any hope of anything being any different. Don't listen to the lie. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Friends, there's a fight to be won. There's a race to be run. We have to throw these things off and the sin that so easily entangles us. But you know, notwithstanding anything that I've just said, you will not run this race by creating a new training regime alone. You will not make it to the finishing line of faith's race just by your own determination and your own discipline alone. And so this brings us to the last and the most important element in our motivation to run the race. It's here in our text in these opening verses. It's the vision of Jesus. We're to look up and fix our eyes on Jesus. So look at Jesus and be assured. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Friends, nothing else that we do in life matters as much as running the race that God has set before us. Nothing else will matter more in 2014 than running the race that God has set before you. And the only way we will run that race with any success will be by keeping our vision, keeping our focus on Jesus. There'll be many issues that will distract us, many problems that might dismay us, many trials that could distress us. But as we keep our vision on Jesus in focus, we'll find strength for the race. You see, the New Testament, the Bible tells us that mere rules and regulations, even more repentance and reformation, as good and as necessary and as helpful as these things are, none of these things alone can overcome the sin that so easily entangles us. They won't. What we need is the expulsive power of a new affection. We need an extra power. And we need that powerful love of Jesus. We need the love of Jesus. We need to enjoy a superior satisfaction to all these other attractions that can so easily allure us and distract us. We need to cultivate the capacity for pleasure in Christ above all else if we're going to run this race with any sense of joy or satisfaction. John Piper says, "One reason lust remains in so many Christians is that Christ has so little appealed to us." So what steps have you taken, can we take, to awaken affection for Jesus? As we think of the new year, 2014, are you going to fight for that joy that is unspeakable and full of glory? Don't be fatalistic. Don't say, oh, it's not for me. This is not possible. It's a different level of Christianity. No, don't settle for less. Look to Jesus Christ. We were created to treasure him in our hearts above all else, and nothing else will satisfy. Treasure him more than sex or sugar or status or any of these things. You see, if we have little taste for Jesus, well, then all these competing pleasures will obviously triumph. So we need with the psalmist to plead with God for the satisfaction that we long for, but perhaps we don't have. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days. Psalm 90. And then look at the most magnificent person in the universe until you see him the way he is. Fix your eyes on Jesus. You see, never think of trying to run this race alone. You can't do it. Remember, as the text tells us, it is Jesus who is the author and the perfecter, the finisher, the completer of our faith. He is the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He's the foundation and the source of our faith from start to finish. So we're to fix our eyes on him. The writer tells us we're to fix our eyes on his person. You see, in the end, we're going to run not because so many wonderful saints have run the course before us, although that's very encouraging and they've finished. We're going to run not because we've agreed to a more strenuous disciplined regime, though that can be helpful. We're going to run because of the vision and the reality of Jesus in our lives that thrills our souls, sets our hearts on fire. That's how we're going to run. Dwell on the glory of his person. Consider him, says the writer. Consider him. Consider his majesty. Consider his power, his sovereignty, his strength. Consider his love, his patience, his grace. He above all, of course, is the one who has run this race before us. He knows the course. The word author that's used here, the author and perfecter of our faith, it can really be translated leader or pioneer. He's gone ahead of us to blaze the trail. So he's able to show us where the obstacles are, and he's able to bring us home. He's waiting, he's finished, and he's waiting to bring us home triumphant. So, fix your eyes on his person. Fix your eyes on his passion. What does the text tell us? Who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame. We're to consider him, says the text, who endured such opposition from sinful men. You see, no runner in the race ever had such terrible experiences as he had. The course that Jesus followed took him the way of rejection, the way of suffering, and the way of death. And yet he kept looking ahead, pressing on, with his heart fixed on that coming joy, as the writer tells us. He says to us, in your struggle against sin, you have not resisted yet to the point of shedding your blood. But consider Jesus. He went all the way to the cross for you. That's where his race ended. So that you and I can be forgiven, restored, reorientated to run the race of faith to the end. Consider him, says the writer, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Fix your eyes on his passion. And then fix your eyes on his position. Where is Jesus now? He has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. There is this glorious pioneer and perfecter of our faith. He's crowned. He's sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. There he is. He's ruling from the utmost height of the universe, from the throne of the universe. He's ruling there for all of us, for those who will enter the race and follow his lead. Consider, fix your eyes on his position of power. From that position of power and glory, he's perfecting our faith. He's completing our faith. He's bringing all his purposes for us to fulfillment. He's completing what he started in us, and he will bring us home. Look to Jesus and be assured. Fix your eyes on his person, on his passion, on his position. According to the letter to the Hebrews, you see, looking unto Jesus is not a Christian option, which we might do. It's our default position. It's the Christian's way of life. That's how we're to live. And as we begin our series on these Sunday mornings in Hebrews with this motto text, we're setting the course for the year ahead. We trust the unknown terrain of the race, wherever the track will take us, to the one who this writer tells us is the same yesterday, today, and forever. We're to fix our eyes on Jesus. We don't know. We don't know what lies ahead of us in 2014. Not one of us does. But we do know the one who has gone ahead of us and who will perfect his plans for us, in us, and through us. As we anticipate the changes and the challenges of the coming year, individually or as a church, let's fix our eyes on Jesus. As we respond to new and exciting opportunities for service and witness in Cardiff and Wales and the world, let's fix our eyes on Jesus. As we expect the arrival of a new minister, Dave Gobbett, and his family, we give God, thanks for the provision, but let's fix our eyes on Jesus as we meet sorrow and suffering perhaps in the coming year. Let's fix our eyes on Jesus. And as we experience joy and successes, yes, perhaps that's more of a temptation in the coming year. Let's fix our eyes on Jesus. So, friends, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And when you're tempted, look to Jesus. When you're disappointed, look to Him. When you're in distress, look to Jesus. When you're cold and backslidden, look to Him. Don't wait to try and improve yourself. Look straight to Him. Run to Him. Keep your eyes on Him. So that whether we're weak or strong, whether we're in the valley or on the mountain, whether we're in sickness or in health, whether we're coming out or going in, whether we're young people or older people, whether we're in riches or poverty, whether we're in life or death, let this be our motto. Let this be our guide. Fix your eyes on Jesus. Therefore, says Paul in another letter, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Like Moses, one of these heroes of the faith in chapter 11, we endure as seeing Him who is invisible. We've been experiencing, haven't we, some very stormy weather these last few days, especially here in Wales and on the west coast of Wales. I was looking at the pictures this week on the TV of the high tides and the floods. And I was reminded of a time, a long time ago now, when I was a teenager in the sixth form. And I went camping for a weekend with a friend from school to near Barmouth, to Fairbourne, actually. Don't know why we went there, but anyway, we arrived at about midday on a Friday, and the weather wasn't too good when we arrived, and we set up our tent on the beach, but soon the wind and the rain swooped in on us down from the mountains, if you know that area, and we huddled around a little fire that we'd sort of optimistically made, but it was spluttering in the heavy rain, and soon the wetness and the sand overwhelmed us. It found its way into the tent, and after one night of attempted sleep, our food, our clothes, our sleeping bags, they were wet and gritty. You know the experience camping in Wales, don't you? Well, we spent most of the next day trying to dry out, wiping wet sand off everything, trying to stay warm. We didn't bother with a fire. I think the low point was sort of underneath the back of his little mini pickup. Not a pickup, it had a thing. What's it called? You put the lid up at the back, anyway. hatchback, that's right. And we were there trying to open a tin of baked beans, and we even wondered, should we just eat it with our fingers, because we don't even bother with the spoons, because then we've got to wash them as well. It was terrible. We spent most of the day sitting in his car, looking at the rain, and dreaming. Not because we slept. We couldn't do that. What were we dreaming of? We were dreaming of home. The hot bath water. The comfort and warmth of dry clothes and a comfortable bed. The tastiness of hot food that wasn't damp or gritty or sandy. Oh, we were miserable. But how much more unbearable would our lot have been without that clear vision, that hope of returning home? We knew it was there. We were looking forward to being greeted by our sympathetic mothers, peel off our damp, clinging clothes, enjoy a hot shower or bath, dress in warm pajamas, rest beneath a soft quilt, and go to sleep on a comfortable pillow instead of these awful car chairs. You see, what made the camping experience bearable, just light and momentary, was the vision of home. Without it, we'd have been truly depressed and defeated. And we need to keep that vision of home, of Jesus, who has finished the race, the one who will complete our faith and enable us to finish the race and to bring us home at last, whether that's in 2014 or 2024, 2034, we don't know. But we need that vision of Jesus to encourage, to strengthen us, to sustain us, to keep us going through all the days of our race. So let the vision of his person be our assurance. Let the vision of his passion be our comfort. And the vision of his power be our strength day by day as we seek to live for his glory. So let's finish with a prayer from this same letter, the Hebrews. May the God of peace, who through the blood of the eternal covenant brought back from the dead our Lord Jesus, that great shepherd of the sheep, equip you with everything good for doing his will. And may he work in us that which is pleasing to him through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen.